What is faith and how do hope and faith and love relate? In our gospel reading, we hear Jesus reassuring his followers that all will be well. Do not be afraid, little flock. Do not be afraid, because God wants to give you the kingdom, which means, at least in part, to bring you into the fullness of God's reign, where there is justice and peace, where we experience love and compassion as the norm for all people. We want to believe this. We want to have faith in this. And perhaps today we do. This Christian message that God is loving, caring, involved, and guiding us in our life journey. This is part of our Christian faith. Faith. How do we nurture it if we have it? And if we think we don't have it but want it, how do we get it? As an aside, you may have heard it said that those who are seeking God have already found God. So you may have more faith than you think. From the letter to the Hebrews, we hear, faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. There's a dynamic there, the dynamics of faith. Paul Tillich wrote a book with that title, and he said that the opposite of faith is not doubt, but rather fear. Fear can paralyze. When we can't see what's to come, how can we stay centered and grounded and hopeful? The first Christians who were sharing stories about Jesus and starting to write down accounts of his life and teaching and their experiences of him, those first Christians had much with which to contend. Viewed as atheists and anarchists by the Roman authorities before Christianity had become the state religion, persecution was the norm for these followers of what was being called the Way. They needed to hear Jesus say, "Fear not, little flock." To hear the love he had for them, to remember that love. They needed to remember what they learned about God from their experiences with him, even though they could not see the way ahead with clarity. Thus you get all of the description of be prepared for the end, thinking it would be coming soon. What else could happen? They weren't sure. They were seeking clarity. The letter to the Hebrews reminded these new Christians about how faith looked long ago by speaking of the faith of Abraham and Sarah, the ancestors of all people of faith. You may hear now, we hear now, Abraham and Sarah, the parents of the faith of not just Judaism, Christianity, but also Islam. Abraham and Sarah didn't have much going for them, it seemed, childless for what seemed like an eternity. As good as dead, we heard they were. How could they possibly have children? And then sent on this journey without much of a sense of where it would end and potentially much to fear. Most of us don't like to set out on journeys like that. I, for one, am so thankful for my GPS. Because I get lost all the time, get turned around. Abraham might have been worried, but because of faith, of which trust is part, he set out. It strikes me that setting out in itself demonstrates faith. Whether one has a doubt or two is really not the issue. There's a website called Godcast, g-dcast.com, where you can watch wonderful video lessons about the people and the traditions found in the Hebrew scriptures, what Christians often call the Old Testament. The idea for these videos in this site is to educate those who follow the Jewish faith. But the creators of the site and the program realized that many Christians were also benefiting. And I actually through a connection, know the person who created this site, and I can tell you that she's very pleased by this, and added the English words for the books of the Bible. Before, they hadn't been in English. Why would you need to put them in English when you're teaching Judaism? I want to share some words from the video, and I may screen this video in my office following the service, if you'd like to come and see it, because it's not just a video, it's a song. And I wish I had time to play this for Martha. Maybe we can play it sometime, it's quite good. A song about Abraham and Sarah, told from Sarah's point of view, and that's another nice thing about this. So Sarah is speaking of her life, and she says, "We are blindly told to go somewhere we don't know, to live without blame. There is a promise made that will never fade, revealed in our new names, Abraham, Sarah. So it is time for us to leave with souls who now believe. It's not beauty, it's not royalty that keeps me going, but a voice that's worth hearing, a path you're showing. It's not just a land that we're walking to, but the journey itself is where we prove ourselves to you. So it's time for us to leave and live what we believe." As different as our lives are from Sarah and Abraham or from Jesus and those first Christians, the Bible speaks to us about the deepest human longings, the human condition, that really doesn't change much even as we develop technology and it looks like things have changed and there's so many cultural differences that separate us from the past. But you hear in those words interpreted by artists from Sarah, not sure where they're going, but it's a good journey. It's God's journey. She's speaking to God in those words. Time for us to leave. And this is a voice worth hearing and a path God is showing, revealing bit by bit. There are cultural differences among us here today. Just in the last few weeks, the media has been placing a spotlight on generational differences when it comes to matters of church, matters of faith, in a sense, or maybe not. Maybe it really is just about church. Must be slow news times here in August that this is making CNN. I'm surprised, a little surprised by that. A CNN article that you can find now on the web entitled "Why Millennials Are Leaving the Church." And then there was a response to this in the Richmond Times-Dispatch, Matt Thornhill's article entitled, just this past week, "Boomers, Millennials, and the Future of the Church." It seems, we're being told, many young adults, millennials as they're known, while not big churchgoers at present, hold the same sorts of values that this church holds. This is great news, really, for the Episcopal Church in general, and I think specifically for us in major ways. Matt Thornhill stated that these values are community, authenticity, volunteering, the opportunity to learn and contribute, and being mentored by someone older and more experienced. The way we experience church here, the way we live our faith in this church, touches on these values that young adults hold as well as everyone else I know who comes here, the boomers, the Gen Xers like me, the great generation. We have more in common than separates us, much more. And faith is not so much about what we have or what we don't have, but it's our willingness to be on this journey in community with authenticity, to open yourselves, myself, to the idea that we are on this journey with God, that God is on this journey with us. It's all about community, authenticity, helping others, and learning and growing together. This is how most of us experience faith in the world now. How to imagine an image, say, for this journey of faith? I find the spirituality associated with labyrinths to be helpful. To walk a labyrinth is to engage in an active prayer about our faith journey and our life journey in general. One of the great things about labyrinths is that a person of any faith, or one who thinks they have no faith at all, can walk a labyrinth as a meditative, reflective exercise to become grounded. And for those of us who enter it with a Christian intention, it can be a very powerful experience of the divine, of the holy in our lives. Unlike a maze, and sometimes you hear this, people say it's a maze. No, no, no. You can't get lost. That's the difference. You can't get lost in a labyrinth that also hasn't been designed to cause you to get lost. But if you follow the path, if you just simply enter into the journey, the true path is there. It weaves in and out. This is what I love about it. You might feel that you're moving away from the center, away from the goal, away from God, but really those twists and turns are all part of the same path, the same journey. Keep walking and the path will lead to the center. This is a great metaphor for life. To your purpose, to the deepest part of you, to your experience of what is holy and true and divine in life, to God. And when you get to the end, it turns out to be a new beginning, because then you can walk out, and then if you want, you can walk back in. Faith, journey, God. Do you have faith? I've been asked that question. You know, I remember college, right? People, the campus crusaders, they come up to you, they'd ask you these questions. Or maybe even now someone in your life has asked you. If someone asks you that question, you might think, faith in what? After all, people have faith in each other or systems or that the sun will rise tomorrow. One can have faith in any number of things. Then there is religious faith. And what a messy business that can be. Just looking at the history of Christianity, there's been struggle and disagreements, violence and killing, just within Christianity, not to mention among the faiths of the world. That's why it's nice to remember Father Abraham. We all started in the same place. Those who are curled up happily with the paper and a cup of coffee right now at home often point to such struggles as a reason to avoid organized religion. Following this sermon, we will say one of the most organized things of our religion, the Nicene Creed, a statement about faith, about God, that comes to us from long ago, the 4th century. Found in the Creed are core beliefs of the Christian faith about God, Jesus, the Spirit, the Trinity. But faith is about so much more than our doctrine and our dogma. Important as they are, and they are important, doctrine and dogma alone, taken out of the context of our lives, can create a lot of trouble and narrow thinking. And it's a huge turnoff to young adults, as well as most of the adults and children I know. Faith is so much less about something we can point to, something we can hold and have, as it is this journey of hope and love. Our faith is bound up with our life together in community. And in community, we know love, and we have a context for understanding our doctrine. And our community context, this community's context, reaches out well beyond these walls into the world. This is our context, the world. Faith, of course, is a gift from God, and it is in Christian community where we nurture faith. Really, that is a huge, huge part of why we're here today. Dietrich Bonhoeffer, the German theologian who was martyred by the Nazis during World War II, right at the end of the war, in his book entitled Life Together, speaks of Christian community as a gift from God that we are privileged to be a part of and enjoy. I've been thinking a lot about this book, Life Together, as I've been beginning my ministry with you and entering into our life together. It's such a gift that we're here today, each one of us together. And we're here for many different reasons. And it's fascinating to me to think about what's brought each of us here. And I also think it's a miracle and not an accident that every single one of us in this formation, this group today, that we're here with each other. A real miracle. God brings us together to walk this path of faith, this journey, sharing each other's joys and struggles as we work to make the reign of God visible here at the corner of Monument and Staples Mill, throughout Richmond and beyond, reaching all the way to Tanzania. We are here, and we do what we do through God's grace, with faith, with hope, and with love. Amen.